You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. I'm here with Dan Natterman and, of course, Miss Kristen Gonzalez.
What do you say with a list?
Isn't that how you're supposed to say it?
No.
How do you say it? Castellano.
Castellano, that would be Gonzalez.
I don't think he's from Barcelona. I think his people are from a more Western hemisphere town.
I was paying him a compliment, a little respect. I was trying to elevate his rank.
Okay, great.
But I think last week's show may have been our most important show ever. Have you been getting as many comments about this show?
No, I haven't been.
I've been getting nonstop text messages from Nick DiPaolo, a bunch of other comedians. I can't remember.
They were upset about it?
No, they was. Rich Voss, Bonnie.
People listen to this show?
A lot of people caught this show, and we're talking about how good we were with this Rolling Stone writer. A lot of people complained
about it. Because you ripped him one, basically.
Jim David was criticized roundly for doing material on the show. Which actually didn't bother me none, but apparently
it has to be funny material.
He did. I find his material funny.
Mm.
So, but in any event, so a lot of people did hear the show, and then I got contacted today on Facebook by an old friend who said he happened to hear the show. He said he heard it on Channel 94, but he may have just made a mistake. In any event, so I think last week's show was very, very good.
What did people like about it though?
Were you there last week?
Yeah.
They liked the fact that it was interesting and that we took it to this guy.
Okay.
That we stood up for truth and reality and didn't let the liberal media just
the Lugan press, as the alt-right calls them.
Steamroll us into a
although he was a nice guy.
Into a cliche.
He was nice. He is nice.
I heard, by the way, Noam, before we get to our guest, we have a very esteemed guest this week. Probably one of our more esteemed guests that we've ever had.
Agreed.
Janine Garofalo, star of film and
Garofalo
TV.
Garofalo.
I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
She'll be along by and by. But I did want to ask you a question. I heard there's a new rule here at the Cellar. Just once again, for those not familiar with the place, there's a restaurant upstairs called the Olive Tree. Downstairs, we have the Comedy Club. And if people upstairs that are at the restaurant want to go to the bathroom, they have to go downstairs and go through the Comedy Club. Now, heretofore, when Chris Rock was on stage, customers were not allowed to go to the bathroom. We would tell them the bathroom was broken.
Right.
Which I've never heard at any restaurant ever in my life. But in any case, that's what we tell them.
No, that's not what we would tell them.
We would have some
being
kind
cleaned
of...
We need Liz.
Why?
Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead.
Well, because Noam didn't want the show disturbed with people going
Alva.
In and
she's the original.
With people going in and out during his set.
Right.
So there was a nobody goes to the bathroom. You had to go to a bathroom down the street.
Right.
Or order a pitcher and pee in that. But I'm kidding about that. But apparently that rule has been lifted. Now people can pee or shit or what have you during Chris Rock's set.
Really?
No.
That's what I was told. That was the new rule. The rule has been lifted. It has been abrogated.
Hi, Lee Moore.
Okay, we'll get to Lee Moore here. But toward the end, Lee Moore. Toward the end.
So this is it. there's always been this thing about, because the customers have to walk right past the stage for to go to the bathroom. So we still, the rule hasn't been totally lifted, so we try to keep it to a minimum. But the fact is, you can't tell people they can't use the bathroom, especially when...
Well, you've been doing it for years.
No, we didn't have been doing it. Actually, we have a deal with the Cafe Juan, which is the next right next door, that people can go down and use that bathroom. But from time to time, or for whatever reason, if the Juan is closed or for whatever reason, all I did was tell them, listen... It's not the end of the world if one person has to use the bathroom because, after all, the customers get up and use the bathroom. It's not like it sticks out like a sore thumb that somebody walked across the aisle. And then Chris is one of the only comedians who didn't. Well, he worked here coming up, but he didn't work here as we were already successful. He kind of worked here before we were really successful and then came back once we were successful. But the other comedians like Amy, Aziz, and whoever else, Ray Romano, whoever else it is that
They're used to it because they've been here
for
a long time.
They never knew the Comedy Cellar stage when there weren't people using the bathroom. Right. So it was hardly unusual to them or stood out to them that somebody didn't use the bathroom. And, of course, if you tell somebody they can't use the bathroom, they're going to get furious. I would get furious, too. I'm in a restaurant. So it's like everything when you're in charge of an organization. You try to make a rule, but you also try to get people to weigh and kind of use call some audibles, and it always people go on a power trip. This is the problem. They enjoy telling people, nope, bathroom's closed. You know, Liz,
yes.
Sit down 1 second, please.
I tried to spare you, but really? Unfortunately, you were summoned.
What is the new rule about when Chris Rock is in the bathroom?
Is on
people
stage?
People can use the bathroom.
No, who told you that?
That people can use the bathroom?
What I thought the rule was this. First, we tell them to use the wah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And if they can't use the wah,
then we have to.
Then we'll let them
use
the bathroom.
Bathroom.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not the end of the world, but we still do try to avoid it.
I thought it was a blanket abrogation of the previous legislation regarding going to the bathroom when Chris Rock was on stage.
Listen,
but it is a flexible on case by case basis.
It's everything short of. See what happened is that the other night, somebody came in and wanted to use the bathroom, a customer. And by the way, did you get in touch with that customer?
Yes, I emailed, invited them back, and right. Thank you very much, blah, blah, blah.
So the customer came and wanted to use the bathroom. He says, bathroom's for customers only. So then he said, okay, well, then I'll buy a drink. And then the manager said, no, doesn't matter. Even if you buy a drink, you can't use the bathroom because you're just buying the drink to use the bathroom. Now, first of all, the drink is money, so, right?
Right.
So why would you... But that, I know that sounds petty, but just like from a manager's point of like... And I'm like, okay, but if we can't tell him he can't buy a drink, and once he buys a drink, he is a customer, and if he's a customer, we have to arrange a bathroom for him.
Yeah.
So the customer left furious. And I'm like, that... And then he, of course, going to go on... I was going to say Craig, on Yelp. And
yeah.
Like all this... I'm saying, just let the guy... use the fucking bathroom. It doesn't mean that the entire thing is going to come crumbling down, you know?
And Chris is actually doesn't mind.
I would say I don't think I do. And
he knows.
I don't know if I said it or it was in my head and I never actually got it out. Sometimes he'll do an hour. So we can't close the bathroom down for an hour. So
yeah.
We try to fit it in, you know, a little bit at a time, whatever it is. And the truth is...
I always thought that historically it was because... when people find out that someone's on stage down there, when the word travels, when John Mayer was coming out, when Chappelle was here, then everybody tries to go down
and they say,
I have to use the bathroom.
Like that anymore.
Yeah.
And then you know, you sort of see that happening if
right.
it is
and
going
you,
to happen. And then you're like, no.
Yeah. And we have it on the freaking TV
exactly.
screens anyway.
Yeah, so right. I mean, but people are... No one.
Let's. Can we get Calabria and Janine over?
Dan is like, this has turned out to be.
I'm not nervous. I think that we have. This is a fascinating discussion, but I think it's been.
Listen,
given the treatment it deserves.
This is really the problem.
I brought it up. So
yeah,
I take
responsibility.
I wanted to build a new bathroom in the Olive Tree. However,
I'm sorry. It was right.
Years ago, I wanted to build a bathroom right where we're sitting, and. Wasn't unable to do it because of all the rules and regulations regarding
the
bathroom.
Wouldn't you have to change everything to become ADA compliant if you did that?
First of all, you'd have it's an amazing story. First of all, you'd have to change everything to be ADA compliant, which makes it...
That's the American Disabilities Act.
Yes, which means it has to take up like twice as much space.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this is the best part, it was against the law to have unisex bathrooms. As a matter of fact, we had to rebuild the underground bathrooms.
Oh, that's right.
Because you weren't allowed to have men and women.
Right,
And now, it turns out, it's a human rights violation to not have unisex bathrooms.
So that's right.
This is Make America Great Again. Okay. So are we
another reason I want to get them over here is I'm always nervous that someone's going to sit down.
No, that's what I was saying when I said you're nervous. You want to just get to
I want to make sure all the places are taken.
The meat of the sandwich.
This way, nobody sits down that maybe we don't want to sit down.
Are you ready for Janine Garofalo?
I certainly am.
We're ready.
I'm nervous.
Why? Well, Dan's got a lot of tough questions for her.
Because first of all, I wanted to have another guest. Dan said no. And then I thought Dan knew her. And
I don't know her. I know of her. I just right over here, wherever you please.
You're okay?
That's fine. This is a great big star, and we're pleased to have her on our humble... Huh?
What?
No, we just started with the preliminary stuff.
No. We usually find out about Dan's week.
Just preliminary stuff. You know how, like, Mark Maron does a monologue or something up front?
So. I usually skip through that.
We don't do that. We just
entree.
Yeah, we did an entree. And we mentioned you. We said you're going to be here, and we're excited to have you.
Thank you, Murr.
Noam's a little bit nervous. He's intimidated by you.
That can't be true.
That is true.
But and Stephen Calabria is here. I asked Stephen Calabria to sit down with us as a placeholder. Very important role. Don't underestimate it. Just wait. Nobody else sits down.
Otherwise, because they never invite him to the table.
Well, sometimes people sit down and we necessarily don't, you know, because this is there are a lot of comics floating around that might want
to. Would you like something
down.
To drink or to eat?
No, I'm okay.
Or some pastry of some kind? Nothing? Okay. All right.
Oh, my gosh. I don't feel properly lit under this light. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, now it's a little too dark.
No,
we got the mood.
Is it too dark?
No, we're good.
It's okay.
So let's give an introduction worthy of our guest.
Go ahead, Dan.
Star of film and TV. And like many of my favorite people, she comes from the great state of New Jersey. Please welcome to our program, Miss Janine Garofalo.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I do very well. How do you do?
Well, fine, thank you.
Janine
and I have known, we don't know each other, but
we've met intermittently, cross paths.
Yeah. Now, do you remember me? Because we had a discussion. You went to summer camp with my sister years ago.
Which one? Was it Girl Scout summer camp?
No,
or was
gymnastics.
It gymnastics camp.
Yeah, gymnastics.
Yeah. I know that seems odd that I went to gymnastics camp, but I also went to field hockey camp.
Seems odder to me that a Natterman would go to gymnastics camp.
Yeah, right.
And that it wasn't Dan.
Well, I went to tennis camp.
Okay.
And I was as bad as you might imagine.
That's how I was at gymnastics and field hockey, because I'm not really a competitor. I don't have that fire to...
You know, I had the same thing in tennis. I mean, my physical skills were bad. So that's a bad basis, but beyond that, I didn't have the killer instinct. When I was winning, I felt bad for the other guy. And when I was losing, I was infuriated. That's much like in comedy. You might not have noticed the same trend.
Yeah.
Like on Last Comic Standing, when I thought I might get into the house, I was uncomfortable. And then when I lost, I was furious. So the same.
Now, don't take this the wrong way.
Go ahead.
When you preface it,
you know it's coming.
I want this show to focus on Janine.
No.
We're going to do so. But we can't.
I prefer we talk more about Natterman.
We're going to focus on Janine.
It's enough out of you, placeholder.
No, I'd like to hear more.
In due course.
I'd like to hear more about the struggle
you have.
Well,
we'll get to that. It's not a struggle. It's just a personality quirk that I have.
It's not really a quirk. I find that a lot of people in entertainment, whatever avenue, have a combination of both narcissism mixed with self-loathing.
That's what I'm getting at. Yes. Noam, of course, thinks it's all about me. In fact, it's a very common thing.
It probably is more common a lot in many vocations, but I just happen to know more people that work in comedy than other jobs. So,
and what about the hatred of other people's success?
That
does
actually
that follow?
I actually haven't found that to be true, at least in my peer group. Now there are certain not a hatred of other people's success. There's a metric of I'm not doing well. Not that I begrudge the person their success, but it just highlights how well I'm not doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So in other words, if I were doing well, that hatred, so to speak, would not exist at all.
No. Well,
it's only there in comparison.
I wouldn't hate a person that's doing well unless they've earned that vitriol. Mm. You know, unless it was a horrible person who treats people horribly and has done duplicitous things to attain that success. Other than that, I would feel like, oh, so-and-so is doing so well, and I'm not doing anything. I don't know if I'm articulating that
correctly. You're articulating it beautifully, and I just have to say that Dan has trouble with that. That's true. Dan, like if I say, boy, Jon Stewart is so funny,
that might set him off the edge.
It might feed into his insecurities. Like he takes it as, and I'm not.
That's right.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what he takes. He actually verbalizes that.
Okay, I don't want to get bogged down.
Well, self-awareness is good. At least there's a dialogue about it, and I feel that's a good thing. And especially since it's dark, which I feel
Can we get a little bit more?
No.
People share in the dark. People share in
the dark. Janine, you look great.
No, I'm an AARP. I like it.
You're an AARP?
Well, when you get to a certain age, they give you...
I understand what that means.
50 and over. Got a free backpack.
You're over 50?
Yes.
I didn't think that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that.
It's the new over 40.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, well, I just turned 53 in September.
Well, you look fantastic.
It's because it's dark.
It's because it's dark. If it was light, you might not.
You look good in the light as well. It's good to see your face here at the Comedy Cellar, because you're mysteriously absent from this place, it seems.
I have a reason for that.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I do very much like this place, and it's one of the best cafe au lait I've ever had. Is
Oh, Ava will be so happy to
in
hear
this
that.
Place.
That's a backhanded compliment for the really Comedy Cellar.
No,
go ahead.
I'm intimidated by the Comedy Cellar, and I'll tell you why. In the 90s, in the early 90s, I started doing stand-up in 85, and in the early 90s, when I was lucky enough to perform here, I would bomb so terribly that I have a almost Pavlovian response to, I feel like I cannot succeed.
We call that post-traumatic
downstairs.
Stress disorder.
I guess, I feel that's overstating it, but okay. But I would be, and every comic who went up before me would do very, very well, yeah. And those that followed me would do very, very well. And it embarrassed me terribly to do so poorly here.
Is that really the reason?
That is really the reason. I would be, and
amazing.
I used to get, because back then most of the spots were much later at night, you know.
It has nothing to do with customers going to the bathroom in front of you.
Well, like I said, the others would do very well. So it's not one of those things where it's like, oh, they're a terrible crowd. I had to take responsibility for.
I was sure it was because either something happened with Esty or you didn't like the high level of right-wing politics around this place.
Oh, no, I never like right-wing politics around any place. You can't escape it. It's in many. Some clubs have it more than others.
We have it the most, I think.
There is definitely a patina of that.
By the way, I think Noam, you've met your match in terms of vocabulary tonight.
Yes.
Noam is usually the most...
patina's the...
I always feel like I'm terribly inarticulate and cannot...
No, not at all.
Well, I can never get to a point succinctly. That's obvious.
But you seem to have a very nice vocabulary, and that's...
Well, I have a word a day calendar.
Oh, do you really?
Noam's usually our words.
But I actually have since... I've gotten them as gifts from my dad almost every year since the sixth grade. And it's just a habit now, and even though a lot of the words I've used tonight, everybody knows I have not used any words that anyone would go, what does that mean? But if you start getting those as a young person, it's unbelievably helpful. It really adds
up. But is there any better reminder of just how your brain becomes less and less efficient as you age than the increasing difficulty remembering these words? Like,
yes.
I cannot learn new words. It's so hard for me now.
I've forgotten people's... The names of very easy, like, oh, what's that actor? Gene Hackman. You know what I mean? Like, everything flies out of my head.
And it's terrifying.
Oh, no, it is. It's now, I never did have a great memory, but it's gotten much worse.
Noam's become increasingly concerned with his
I'm very concerned.
Mental.
But the only thing that makes me feel better is that almost everybody around my age mm-hmm. is having the same terrors. So, but then I see somebody like Hillary Clinton or these people in their 70s, who show no signs, but I assume they have strategies of ways of hiding
well,
it when they can't remember something.
Well, I think there are some people that their brain functions at a higher level than others, and I would say Hillary Clinton is one of those people that is way above average intelligence. But she, since she was a very young person, has been using her brain and using it nonstop intellectual stimulation.
And I guess she doesn't do any drugs, which may or may not have
right,
an effect.
She probably has a very clear head, you know.
By the way, one time I was met a girl at a cafe whose name I should have remembered but forgot. And so here's a trick. I ran into the bathroom and went to Facebook and started scrolling, you know, looking at the pictures of my Facebook friend because I knew she was a Facebook friend.
Yeah.
And after a certain time, she knocked on the door and said, hey, it's Eileen. No. After a certain time, I found her picture, and...
But that doesn't help when you
I have a much easier trick for if you don't remember somebody's name, and it's people that you've known long enough that you cannot ask. If you're lucky enough to have somebody that you can introduce them to, you introduce your friend to the person whose name you've forgotten first. So, for example, I'll say, oh, this is Pete, and then I'll pretend I have to cough or something go
right.
before I can say the person's name, and they will say it.
I've done that before. Yeah, I understand.
So that you did know it, yeah. But you just had to clear your throat.
That works if there's only one person whose name you can't remember.
I know.
Cough
no,
three
well,
times.
You know cough that then you pretend something went down the wrong pipe. And
sometimes I will compensate if I forget somebody's name with every other fact I know about them.
It's
so how's your garden doing? Like, in other words, if I say enough shit that I know about them, they'll assume I must know their name as well.
Or you can pretend you have a nickname for them, you know, like, hey, man,
Peaches.
Or hey, cutie.
Or just be very enthusiastic and hug them and say, dog, man, it's so good to see you, brother.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So I have only one question that I've been wanting to ask Janine Garofalo this one question for, I guess it's like 15-something years now or something like that. How did you know... And by the way, I am pretty, you know, conservative. However, I always admired you because you took on Bill O'Reilly and you said there were no weapons of mass destruction and you had it out. I saw that show and you were right.
He still feels like I owe him an apology.
Well, no, he owes you an apology because you were right. And then he, to his forever discredit, never had you back on to tell you, you know what, Janine, you were right.
Well, after a lot of people felt that there was no weapons, I'm not special in that. There was lots of people. But unfortunately, mainstream media and right-wing media only likes to have people who are in entertainment on who are not supporting the status quo because it's easy to mock and marginalize them, right? So it's easy to go, oh, what do I care what that actor says or whomever.
Right.
So even though there was many, many people in high levels of government and other people can respect saying there's no weapons of mass destruction, you don't have those people on, right? Because it's not easy to discredit them. But I had been on the O'Reilly show about 5 times. That was, I think, the last time. But after the invasion, clearly, months and months after it was clear it wasn't going well and there was no weapons, he was still calling for me to apologize for being so wrong. And also back at the time, Joe Scarborough also demanded that I... And he had a minion of his come to one of my stand-up shows and give me this fake award called the Black Crow Award, meaning you have to eat crow for being so wrong.
Oh, God.
This is O'Reilly did that or Scarborough?
No, Scarborough did that years ago. I mean, this is many, many years ago.
That's terrible.
But it was a drag, sure. Yeah, it was. I don't enjoy looking back on the early aughts, and unfortunately, I feel the same and worse is coming in 2017 after January 20th. And now that I'm older, protesting is going to be more difficult as I'm older because my lower back hurts a lot. I don't like saying, and I have to urinate quite a bit now, which I know that's vulgar, but as one gets older, and
protesting is not for the.
It's a young man's game.
It's a young man's
game. Protesting.
Yeah. But anyway, so I just want to tell you as a kind of right wing guy, I thought you got a bum rap, and I thought it was terrible with O'Reilly. One of O'Reilly's worst moments, actually.
I'm sure he would not see it that way.
Yeah, but yeah, well, he's kind of an egomaniac. But for somebody, and I watch his show, and I like his show. It's always stuck with me. I say, you were so wrong, she was so right. Why can't you just admit it, you know?
Well, it's sort of not what he does. To admit, if he were to admit he was wrong, then he would lose kind of the hold. You know what I mean? You have to just keep plowing forward. Many people are wrong about a lot of things.
But you guys almost, like, bet on it or something. Like, it was, like,
oh,
really...
No, I said, if I'm wrong, and... I said, I will crawl across, I think, cut glass and deliver roses to Lynn Cheney. And he was calling for an apology to that, or to some effect, or to come back on the show and say I was wrong.
All right. We happen to have Bill O'Reilly here. No, I'm
kidding. Oh, it's like that scene from Annie Hall with Marshall McLuhan.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Okay.
We're here with Janine Garofalo.
Like this.
That's what people on the radio do, right? Every now and again, they say, we're here with, yeah, well, you know, just in case
it's
somebody...
It's called resetting. They always complain.
Reset.
With Janine Garofalo, yeah. Iconic, mythical figure from...
mythical? Ooh!
Janine, I did want to talk to you, if it's not too delicate a subject, about your intimacy issues, which are legendary.
Yes. Yeah,
you've been quoted as saying you're asexual. Is that correct?
Yeah, I feel that way. I mean, I don't know if what the hard and fast rules of asexuality are. And actually, I've been living with the same gentleman, my boyfriend, for 18 years. And when I used to drink all the time, I could be sexual. And now we're still together, but that's more about real estate. Yeah, we're like best friends who live together, who used to be boyfriend and girlfriend. If that makes sense. He is my closest friend, but
right. It's like married.
Like Mike married. The sexual part. Yeah, exactly. The sexual part sort of.
Yeah, but of course, right, sexless couples are nothing new, but it.
Well, I have I always had, even growing up, a very low libido, I feel.
Yeah.
At least to what TV and movies tell you you're supposed to feel, or how my peers seem to be acting.
Right.
I just never seemed to be that interested. Now, I would be very attracted to certain males in high school and college, usually based upon how funny they were. And that's not me saying, oh, aren't I interesting person? I said that. Mm-hmm. Of course, looks had things to do with it, too. There's some people I'm attracted to for their looks, theoretically. And then some people who make you laugh so much are intellectually stimulating that you become very attracted to them. But the nuts and bolts of having sex is not appealing to me. Was not. And then for many years I was drunk all the time. And I would have sex a lot because it made me feel normal to do that. And also when you're drunk, it's easy to do it. And then when I got sober, I was like, oh no, now we're back to... Although there was this brief period of when I was around 43 to 47 where I actually felt sometimes a libido. And I think it was just my my body saying, oh no, it was 37 to 43. Sorry, couldn't have been 47. That it was my biological clock saying, if you want to have a kid, you better do it. I feel like it was a biological imperative.
I believe that.
Because I felt like I would like to have sex with a person, which is unusual for me. I think it's biological, and also I'm ashamed, easily embarrassed. I'm very easily embarrassed.
Well, maybe you had a Catholic upbringing, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I did, but, you know, so did a lot of people who have sex all the time. You know, I don't think it's the Catholicism. I think it's more just garden variety body shame, and also I always think it's just embarrassing to be that vulnerable.
And you don't have any, like, Freudian theories as to why this might have come about?
I have tried to think of it. Yeah. I have tried to think of where this comes from. Like I said, some of it I believe is biological. I think some people's libido is lower and higher than others.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean...
And Chris Rock had a joke years ago where he said, a man is only as faithful as his options. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for Chris Rock and for many others. I think for some men, faithfulness is not quite that as difficult.
No, I think it's case by case, but also... It stands to reason that people don't want to be monogamous. You know, you meet a lot of interesting people in your life, and if you get married young, then you really have a hard road ahead of you. You know, marriage is an institution from the 12th century, average lifespan, 23, 24, 25 years, then you died of
consumption. Oh, yeah, you're breaking my heart.
No, what I'm saying is, it was easy to be monogamous.
Don't worry.
It was easy to be monogamous when people lived to the age of 30 tops.
Right.
Now people live routinely to 90. It's untenable to me, seemingly, to be monogamous. Now, at the beginning of my relationship with my current boyfriend, we were not monogamous, and I think that's why we're still together. We had a sort of a policy of just don't discuss it.
Laissez-faire.
And what is it now?
Now it's monogamous, although I have encouraged him to do whatever he feels like he wants to do.
Wait, but I thought it was currently a non-sexual kind of...
No, I am non-sexual, so I've encouraged him to...
Oh, I see.
If he would like to. And if he does, that's his business. I don't know.
I don't know him, but I could imagine myself in that situation actually going outside the marriage, but even though I had permission, lying to my wife about it because I still knew that it might make her feel bad.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it makes him feel bad, actually, because he would prefer that we were still sexually active. And I wish we were, too. Now, having said that, like I said, he is my best. We're closer now, actually, in certain ways, than we were at the beginning.
You like the relationship. You don't want to end the relationship.
I actually don't. Right. But like I said, a lot of it has to do with the apartment that we have that we like, and neither of us would like to leave it. And we have dogs, you know, we foster dogs together. We have a dog, and we share that in common, and our current dog could not live without him. You know, they're so close that it would...
So you're staying together for the dogs.
In a certain way, but also we love each other and we are best friends. And having said that, I hope this isn't terribly boring, but...
I'm fascinated.
I think it hurts his feelings a little that when I would encourage him to go outside. Now, if he does, I hope he does. Mm-hmm. He has never discussed it with me. And it would not hurt me. It would
How
hurt me.
How old is he?
He's younger than me. I'm 53. He's probably 47.
Oh, that's my age.
Well, 47, he still has a...
Which I feel is young.
For a man, you still have a pretty healthy libido at 47.
Yeah, yeah. And
I have a healthy libido myself. I'm glad you asked.
I think this gentleman would like to jump in.
I have a
Mr.
question.
Mr. Calabria?
Would you feel bad if he was not to tell you, or would you prefer that he told you?
No, I think he's not... if he's doing it, he's not telling me. What would hurt me, but I would understand it, is if he fell in love with someone else and wanted to move out.
That would certainly
hurt me, but I would encourage him to do... Because also I think he'd make a great father. I've never wanted to have children. And he has felt that he hasn't either, but he's still young enough to do it. And I think he'd be an excellent father, just seeing how sensitive and how kind he is. So if that is the path that he chooses to go down, I would like that for him. I would miss him terribly, but I would like him to do that.
But I think she's making
this
an interesting...
This is a painful situation.
But it's an interesting point. It's similar to, like, what Robert and what they discussed in the Cheaters book on a very more kind of basic level, but or Cro-Magnon level, that they the way that they operate. But just that, like, the closer you become, the less sexualized the other person is. So it's actually more difficult to be sexual when you're closer and closer and you know everything about the person. That's why people have these one-night stands.
It is for me. It is for me.
The hotness is
Yeah, because
less,
that spark is gone. There's nothing more exciting. Even with a low libido, I did recognize at the beginning of a flirtation and a relationship or meeting for drinks, it's exciting. And the forbidden fruit aspect, which was not really there for him and I, is very exciting to some people. It's illicit. It puts a spring in your step, too, just like the Adderall we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, actually, when you were talking about, I'm saying, like, you know, if I, with a low libido, it seems like the new guy would be the most likely one to have sex with.
Well, everybody feels that way, I think. The flirtations, the newness of a person, they don't have come with baggage you can project onto them. They haven't done things that annoy you yet.
But also, the shame part that you mentioned, because you can just never see that person. You don't have to, you know. Yeah.
Some of the best sex I ever had in that brief period where I was... had a sexually active, my biological imperative. All I wanted to do was have sex and then not. I don't want to talk to that person. I was like, you know, it would be so great if you would leave. And I don't mean that mean.
Like that too.
That's I don't mean that mean, but there was something like, I don't need
to. Well, one time a young lady said to me, I can have sex with you, but you have to promise never to contact me again. And I was...
I find that exciting.
I was delighted. I was certainly. She was expecting a protest. She didn't get one from me.
But oddly, people then decide they like you if you're the aloof one first. It's just an age-old push-pull. Ordinarily, you would think people would love it, right? If you said, "Let's have sex, but don't contact me." But when you do posit that with people, then all of a sudden, it makes them question them. Why? Why doesn't?
Well,
he
no,
or she
I
want
found
me to contact
I,
them.
I didn't have that reaction. I was like, "That sounds good to me."
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was before Facebook. Had it been in the age of Facebook, I might have made some effort online to contact her again,
or to stalk.
To stalk, as we call it. But I didn't know her last name, and there was no real reasonable in the pre-Facebook era way to find her. So I just went on with my life. She did leave her underwear in the house.
On purpose?
I don't know if it was on purpose, but her pink thong was still in
her underwear.
Well, it's a hack move. It's like a thing that maybe they saw in a movie or something. Like, I'm going to leave this.
But I didn't know how to contact
her. Or they couldn't find it.
I didn't know how to contact her, but I did do things to that underwear.
But
you are right.
What kind of things would one do?
Well, you can imagine.
You know, I find the thong very unappealing. I don't know why.
But you're not a gentleman.
But why do you find it appealing? I'm asking in earnest. I'm not trying to...
The thong?
Yeah,
I don't like the thong either.
It's uncomfortable. It doesn't look good on most people.
Doesn't.
And
it's
gross.
But when it looks good, and it's a lot of it is symbolism. This is a girl who's naughty. The same as a lower back tattoo, which may or may not be aesthetically pleasing.
But when so many people have them and so many people wear thongs, why is that?
Well, you know,
naughty?
I guess it's just like you know, big boobs. I mean, it's cliche, but it's always good.
No.
There's certain areas where originality is not. You don't want originality. I don't want a girl with original breasts. I mean different.
Like one
unique.
I see what you're saying. That don't fit the aesthetic.
Sometimes conventionality is what the doctor ordered.
There's small children behind us. Can they hear us, or does it just sound loud in the headset?
They won't understand.
Bongs are not conventional, nor practical.
You are very opposite sides of the coin in the sense that she is low libido, but likes the intimacy of a relationship, and you are high libido.
I'm not high libido.
You're normal to above average libido scale, and you're deathly afraid of the relationship.
Yes, that is interesting, and that's something we can delve into.
Well, afraid of it, I guess, until you're not. You know, I never particularly wanted to be in a long-term relationship. This just happened. You know, I mean, it wasn't... I never looked... Never wanted to be married, and I never have wanted to...
But you're not married.
No. I mean, like I said, we've been together 18
years. Wait, you were married, though.
Yeah, that was in Las Vegas.
So this is not the same guy.
No. That was my boyfriend at the time. We got married as a joke, and then it turned out it was real.
Right.
We were married for 20 years.
All right.
And then had it dissolved by a notary public because he got married for real.
Yeah.
And the lawyer pulled up those papers that in a blackout, I didn't know we signed them and went to a courthouse.
Is this current guy also like a quirky comedic type person that you seem to
Rob
like?
Oh, it's Rob Cohen. He was a writer for the Ben Stiller Show.
Rob
and
Cohen.
He directs Marin's show now. He's a director of Marin's show.
What I'm getting from you is that you have a Jew thing.
I you know what? I enjoy Jews, Palestinians, all and sundry. But when I was a kid, honestly, my mom used to say, marry a Jewish man, they make the best husbands. I don't know how she came to that or if that's a true thing, but she always used to say,
I've heard
she
that.
Was Irish, marry a Jewish man, they make the best husbands. Probably there is an idea of a value on family or something
that's
like that.
That's a stereotype that may or may not have any validity.
I don't know what it was. But
Noam is a great husband, but, you know, he's only one, I think so.
I'm a devoted father. I don't know what a great husband
well,
I am.
Well, you know, you're not violent. And,
no.
Actually, that's the most important thing if you have kids. I think it's actually the most important thing to be a great father,
dad.
Even above being a good husband.
By the way, you know.
I am a devoted father, for sure.
If we could just put this out there real quickly, Noam's expecting a third child.
Congratulations.
And to wit, we're married, don't have sex that often, but it seems like whenever my wife feels frisky is when she's ovulating.
Right.
Which she seems to get pregnant every time
sense.
We have sex.
And she's not a young woman. I'm very much in admiration of a woman that, at her age, and I don't want to mention
her. She's 43.
That's young.
That can get,
I feel
but that
young.
Can get pregnant without any IVF.
She's
right?
Puerto Rican.
I'm just saying. there you have it.
It just seems old to be able to get pregnant without any help.
But for some reason these days, it seems like it's happening more. I think because people are healthier.
She's healthy, yeah.
Whatever it is, but I've heard there seems to be more and more women over 40 who seem to be getting pregnant without...
Celine Dion had a devil of a time, but maybe that's because Renee was so old, or maybe
that
she...
That could be, yeah.
No, a lot of women have trouble from day one getting pregnant. You know, some women have trouble getting pregnant. But, you know, we got off it so quickly, we didn't give it the attention it is required, which is... We'd love you to be performing in the Comedy Cellar.
Okay.
And it kills me
that
you...
I feel like I won't do well. I just remember not doing well.
I cannot believe
be
that's
happy,
possible.
So let's do it. I would be happy.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
You have my phone number,
We by the way, we have various plans, programs that you can participate in. We have our gold plan, which means you stop by whenever you want and go on. But you
I would never do that. Even if I don't,
well, I
don't
know if you qualify
agree
for
with that when people stop by and jump the line.
Okay, I don't know.
Does
anyone
like
qualify for the gold plan? I think she would. I think
No. I don't think I would qualify, but I also wouldn't even if I did.
Okay, then there's the platinum where you get to go on... I don't know if it's platinum, but there are people that go on under an assumed name.
That is definitely something I don't need to do because at this point, especially younger people would have no idea who I was. So.
And then you have our garden variety plan, a plan that I've been on for many years now, where you put you on the schedule under your name.
Yes, I
and
think
you
that,
go
that the best David, thing would be to put on under my name on the schedule.
Which is no...
the good old-fashioned
no
way.
Lousy plan. David Tell
David's
is on that
good
plan.
Enough for David
no,
Tell.
I just assumed that was... Yeah. The plan there, that people...
Dan, or then actually, there's plan B where if you bomb, we change your name after so that nobody...
Well, see, I'd be willing to do that, the bombing. I would change my own on the stage and say, thank you, I've been Beverly Center.
Do the young people are not familiar with some of the classics? Do I have to name them? Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, The Truth About Cats and Dogs...
Well,
that's a very
young people movie. Aren't going to be familiar with Cats and Dogs. Also, this is eons ago, but also I have no social media platforms. And when you don't, you
Why?
Might as well not. I don't know. I just
you
isn't
need
it
to.
Great?
I just don't like to have it.
She was a huge movie star. And
I was not a huge movie star, but I was lucky enough to be a working actor in movies in the 90s.
For a comedian to go into, I mean.
Janine, we told Harry Enten, this guy you just met there, that you were going to be on the show, and he's 28 years old. He rattled off 8 different movies that you were in, and he knew the roles of each movie.
Well, that's unusual. Maybe he just quickly IMDb.
No, absolutely not.
Well, he's also a genius.
That's unusual.
Well,
you're better known than you might be.
Well, here's what we'll do.
For.
We'll have a decibel meter downstairs when we announce your name.
It'll probably be, but I don't see. But this implies that I need to be known.
No,
I don't need to.
Nor we're just curious. We're just curious.
People to know me. I would assume that most people under a certain age, and even some. It's not like I was very, very famous for very long. I was sort of lucky in the 90s from probably about 92. And then it ended sort of as quickly as it started around 2002.
And why do you think it ended? Is that just show business?
Well, there's a few reasons. I think that I took 2 years off in the early 2000s to work at Air America radio station. So
That's where Maren worked.
When you, Maren worked there too, yeah. So when you take 2 years off and then try and jump back in as an older, early middle-aged person, and also a person that was never known for being a real versatile, a chameleon-type actor who was nominated for an Oscar. You know, I never had any of that, and I don't think that there's a lot of people in the industry who see me as a particularly skilled actor. I'm not saying that to be self-deprecating. I'm just saying I think that's... I was typecast early on, and unfortunately that is problematic. And then there's just not a lot of roles for middle-aged women. There really isn't. And the ones that exist go to more known entities.
Right.
But that's just the way it is.
Lucky for you, you're a great stand-up, so that you can always work in stand-up. Is, I was just saying, we were talking the other day, and we were saying, you know, stand-up, God bless it, we don't appreciate what a great thing it is, because, even though I shit on it all the time because I'm frustrated and angry, but the fact is you can always make money with stand-up.
No, I am so pleased. I didn't start acting until I was 27. I started stand-up at 19. And the acting only came through two great opportunities from Gary Shandling and Ben Stiller, who I knew through stand-up. That's how that happened, and then it started opportunities coming in. But having said that, I've always preferred stand-up. I can control it. There's much more freedom. It's much more fulfilling in a lot of ways.
And you have something to say.
And you can express yourself, and it can be a lot of fun when it's not a lot of fun. And it is a revenue stream. It's my main revenue stream now, and it's also something that is consistent. Acting is not consistent for me. I am beholden to whomever would like to cast me if they feel so inclined. And that is few and far between. So, but I feel I get a lot of satisfaction out of stand-up. I enjoy it. I don't know how other actors who don't work a lot handle it, because that's got to be very, very frustrating to always be waiting for someone to hire you.
They end up taking dinner theater and summer stock. And right. You see these guys quite often kind
or
of like are familiar
writing
to you.
Writing jobs.
Which is also fine.
Well,
if they're
Carrie
working.
Fisher was a writer, but most actors are not
most
writers.
Most actors are not writers.
Oh, I just coincidentally reading Carrie Fisher's book. As you all know, she passed away yesterday. I had just happened to have picked up her book the day before that.
Well, what do you make of this, like, 2016? Is it, people are saying, oh, 2016 was a horrible year. Is that true, or is it just that we just sort of hear about it?
A lot of big names in the music business.
A lot of people die every year, every day.
It seems like in the music business we lost some major ones that may statistically be a standout year for music.
Right. Yeah.
You know, with Prince.
George Michael, David Bowie, Glenn Frey.
It might have been a big year for music. Whether it's a big year in general for people dying, I don't know, but Facebook seems to think so.
No, it's mostly based on the music, I think.
Well, it's a big thing on Facebook. If you know, people just post how 2016 is killing everybody, you know.
Well, also, I think a lot of them were backloaded, like happened towards the tail end of 2016.
So we remember it.
So it seems like more. But
and the election. I mean, I think a lot of people just think 2016
because there's been a national
like,
death. There's a national bereavement.
did your association with being political, not even without...
Yes, it hurt me very much, if that's where you're going. Yes. It hurts females very much. It's taken differently for males. It doesn't hurt Alec Baldwin or Tim Robbins or many, many vocal males.
Why is that?
In the same way, there's always a gender bias. She's crazy. It's just easier to marginalize females. I know there's probably some people rolling their eyes listening to this right now, but there is a decided difference to how words are taken and heard by some in society, but definitely those that hire you or whatever. They generally don't like it from anybody who asks questions or...
I accept that. You're looking at me. I'm not rolling my eyes at that. I believe that's true.
But I... Definitely. And also, if you don't... What will hurt you more than anything, and this transcends gender, if you don't have sustained career success, that's really the be-all, end-all. If you are not a person that people... would like to see or your movies or TV shows make money or profit, if that will hurt you more than anything. And so I am never a person who generated a lot of, like, oh, she's in this movie, let's go see it, or she's in that show. So you combine that with being vocal before it was okay to be vocal about such things, then take and taking 2 years off.
Yeah. But back in the day,
if you're a marquee name, then they'll have to hire you.
Right. They don't like if you generate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of people that studios would like to not work with.
Right, but you gotta make
money.
And
until such time as they don't make money for them.
So if you had it to do over again, would you have been less political?
No.
No. Okay.
No. Because it's, you know, just we're all citizens. One must react to things that happen in the way that feels right for them. And when I would go on these shows or whatever and say, tell that actor to shut up. I'm not an actor, really. I'm a citizen like you. Nobody would ever say, tell that plumber to shut up. Tell that waiter to shut up. But for some reason, people feel it's okay to, you know, the shut up and sing or shut up and just whatever.
Well, I will push back on that in one sense because I feel it, which is that when I see someone on TV, and I know the reason they're on TV is because they're well known for something that has nothing to do with what they're talking
about. That's more about the news programs, though. That's what I said, like Bill O'Reilly, what I was saying earlier.
I will say, tell that actor to shut up. But if it was a plumber, I say, well, that plumber must have had something really that somebody thought was a unique insight, and that's why they brought the plumber on. The actor is because they're famous.
Well, for the mainstream media, that's their problem for booking it. And I remember when I was on Fox and Friends, which was a terrible idea. Don't do it. And they were picking on me. And Brian Kilmeade said, why should we listen to you? And all I could say to him was, why did you book me? You shouldn't listen to me if you want to or not. You booked me. You asked me to come on the show. I wish I hadn't, but I did. Now, he could have easily invited people, like I said, from the Pentagon or authors or figures who were against the war that people wouldn't say shut up to. They didn't, for a reason. It's not easy to pick on them. It's very easy to get you, the viewer, to be mad at me. It's very easy to have people rally in the sport of picking on the singer or the actor or the comic. It's not easy if you're like, oh, that guy who's worked in the Pentagon, for that guy who actually was the inspector for in Iraq, who said there's no weapon, Scott Ritter.
Scott Ritter.
Yeah. Why doesn't Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity have him on? Why doesn't Brian Kilmeade yell at him?
And they tried to smear Scott Ritter. I remember
they did.
Because he had some deal with something in Iraq.
They smeared him with a setup of a young girl who was under 18 to meet him at a McDonald's. It was a classic thing. They tried to do it to Nader, and it's a tale as old as time. And Breitbart used to do it all the time to people. You have somebody on, get in touch with them in social media who's a female and is somewhat flirtatious. It's just one of those old setups, and unfortunately, males more than females fall for it all the time because people are people, and human nature is what it is, and ego is ego. It is flattering to be flirted with by an attractive
Scott Ritter
person.
Just, you know, was this weapons inspector who, after the first Gulf War, had been up Saddam Hussein's butt. Like, he was really a militant anti-weapons guy, and
the guy hired to do so.
Yeah, but he was very, very tough. Mm-hmm. And then run up to the second Gulf War, Scott was like, I don't think there's any weapons.
He's the guy that would know. He was the one that made sure. Now, the reason we went in is because we knew there was no weapons. You don't go into a place if you think there's going to be bio warfare. That doesn't look good for your cause. You only do it if you know it's that they thought it was going to be easy, which that was a miscalculation on the... And actually, they don't care if it wasn't easy. But...
I have a feeling Noam might be in disagreement
I don't want to get to that. But what's interesting about Scott Ritter is that when he was saying there were no weapons, rather than saying, well, this guy's always been pretty reliable in the past, maybe we should double check our math here, they tried to just assume that he had been corrupted, that he was doing it for money. They tried to smear his character rather than deal with what he was saying.
They held him up
learned.
As the guy, the
that's,
greatest.
That's right.
The first after George Bush Sr. Like, we did it. We got rid of it. You know what I mean? He was always used as the go-to guy for, this is proof that they're not there. Then he was held up and reviled because
he was
saying
they're not
there.
It's a classic case of confirmation bias. When he didn't say what it is they wanted the outcome to be, they weren't interested in what he said. Only if he said what they already wanted to be true would they listen to him.
And his life fell apart after
and
that.
And I learned a lesson from that, you know.
I
think we all did.
If we didn't, we just did again.
Yeah.
This is a little off topic, but have you seen the new history series on Netflix that goes through each era? You should really check it out.
No, what's it
called?
It's
really amazing. I'll get the name for you, but it's very succinct. Mm-hmm. It sums up, it makes us look terrible, but that's beside the point. But it's a very interesting series that you guys should.
Well, people can be terrible.
Yeah,
that's
they usually
history.
Are.
Yes.
I did want to know, by the way, is a question I had that has nothing to do with politics, but when
yes,
people...
Yes, let's not talk about... No, I'm sure there's a fatigue that the listeners are like, let's not talk
about... Well,
Noam loves
politics.
If you actually start performing here as you've threatened to do, and we actually talk politics, you will not find me nearly as reasonable as I seem to be on the radio.
Oh, no, I'm certain. But also, you know, people think I talk about politics a lot in my stand-up. I don't, actually.
No, I mean, when you're hanging out up here.
Oh, okay. I actually have so much social anxiety, I rarely hang out anywhere anymore now that I can't drink.
Well, you'll be surrounded by other people with terrible social anxiety, so don't worry.
I tend to always leave a place immediately.
Well, we're going to shake you with that.
The question I had is, when people do come up to you, as they must, what do they most like to talk about with you?
Well, recently it's been Wet Hot American Summer, the Netflix series, which we just finished filming season 2. So for some people, it's Wet Hot American Summer on Netflix. I guess a lot of, like, younger LGBT kids, Romy and Michelle, oddly. It's had the second life with younger...
Mary Savino and Lisa Kudrow
go to a high school reunion. And Janine plays like the chick from school that was like the chick.
Heather
that,
Mooney. Yeah, like those parts like, that I can't.
The brooding.
I know, and it's always I hate to do it because it's actually not me. The most of the characters I've been asked to play, I really feel that I'm very polite and very chatty, and I'm not a person who would ever tell somebody to fuck off.
There's a famous scene in Romy and Michelle where one of them is trying to pretend that she's somebody. You know, you go to high school, you want to be important.
Oh, she pretended she invented Post-its.
And then Janine comes over, and it's like, no, he didn't invent Post-its. So-and-so from 3M invented Post-its.
Art Fry
that invented Post-its. So informative and also a funny exchange.
Right, I didn't know that either until I read the script, that Art Fry of 3M Corp invented Post-its. I didn't know that.
Yes. So she was, you know, that was Lisa Kudrow that was
Lisa Kudrow, Maris, and it was Justin Theroux's first film. He was 25. Yeah. He played the cowboy guy who threw cigarettes at me. And it was Cameron Manheim's first film, I think.
I think before Amy Schumer, like, you were the most movie-working comedian, you know.
Oh, I don't think that.
Female comedian. What other female stand-ups did as many movies?
I don't think so.
Or Trent, you know what I mean?
That can't be true. In the 90s, maybe it seemed like it, but I don't think so.
And Wet Hot American Summer is really great
Thank you. Yeah,
that's really great. And Netflix is the place to be now, so, you know, you're...
Also, no, I'm very pleased that Netflix picked up.
She's back, baby.
I just read an article. Was it Sean McCarthy? Somebody wrote the top 10 stand-up specials of the year, and you have a stand-up special?
Oh, yeah, on CISO.
What is that? Is that a
CISO is a network. I don't know how you get it. I don't have it.
Is it streaming,
I guess?
I don't know. But anyway, CISO, he said it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
And then I actually, now I understand why. So I went last night to try to prepare for the interview to find it. And I couldn't find Netflix and couldn't find an Amazon.
No,
and I fell asleep.
It wasn't on Netflix. I was supposed to do a special for Netflix, and then apparently a new person who made those decisions felt I was not funny and dropped me from the lineup of that, which definitely hurt my feelings. But then CISO was nice enough to say, well, we'll do it. So that was nice.
This is Lamour Azran Garfinkel.
I think we're
going to... Oh, my God, you're the second Lamour I've met.
Well, no, because we're running short of time, and I promise.
Are you Israeli?
I know Janine wants to hear you listen to Lamour.
Are you Israeli?
Yes, I am.
Yes, so is she. Lamour Savan.
Oh, okay.
Was her name.
Oh, my gosh.
Lamour
I love that name.
But just before we move on to Lamour, and we're only going to be on 5 more minutes, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I monopolized the conversation. I talked too much.
You're the guest. Noam said to me, we need somebody else. I don't have enough shit to ask Janine.
I was sure you hated us. I was sure.
Why?
Because I saw you working at Eastville, and I was like, nobody has asked me to
perform here, and I didn't want to come and say come over and say, can I work? I figured if somebody wanted me to do sets here, they would get in touch with me.
The word on the street was that you didn't want to perform here.
That was not the word on the street, that was a word in your head.
That's an incorrect word on the street.
Well, anyway, what's done
is
done.
Let's get it off the street. I would be happy to join the schedule.
Oh, my God, fantastic.
It's kind of
water
under the bridge.
If I start bombing, I'm so sorry in advance. If
you're not going to bomb.
We don't know.
Well, we'll see. No.
It's hit or miss with Garofalo.
I'm optimistic. we also have a new menu, so you will be...
Is the Cafe Olé still the same?
What, yes, Cafe Olé still the same.
We'll have to find out.
I remember from the 90s, it was as good as Tassa de Oro, that late Tassa de Oro that used to be on.
That's a cup of gold, I believe, in Spanish.
I believe it is, but that... Two of them were the two best Café con Leches, Café Leches I've ever had in my life.
Can you confirm that?
Clearly, it's not going to be as good as your...
It is golden teacup, actually. That says for tea.
She majored in Spanish literature.
She is, according to her, a fluent Spanish speaker.
I took it for 7 years and could barely speak it,
I'm sorry to say.
You
have to live there. That's the only way.
And she married a Mexican? Is he Mexican?
Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican, sorry. I don't
know. So did you.
I did too.
What are the odds?
Oh, I know why. Because his name is Gonzalez, so I always think of Speedy Gonzalez. I think of Mexican.
Lamore, if I could just...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you, that's what my... I'm not saying... I mean...
It's okay. He's married to a Puerto Rican.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't Gonzalez usually a Mexican name? I think it is.
I guess not, because he's Puerto Rican.
I said usually.
What's your wife's last name?
She's actually half Indian, so her last name is Bihari, but her mother's name is Collazo.
If we could just... Yeah. I just promised Lamore...
Tracy. Oh, I'm sorry. She
looks Indian, but she's like Portland, Puerto Rican. She's hot.
Lamore Azrin Garfinkel.
Oh, thank you. Because I want you to see this, and maybe you'll be on it.
What is it?
Okay,
so...
Oh, thank you, because I can get something
from
you.
She's got Tracy Morgan in there.
Lamore is a comedy lover. Now, she's a... She is the...
She's also a music lover, by the way, but go ahead.
All right, I didn't know that.
She's a real muso.
She's a comedy lover.
She used to come see me when I was a
musician. And she's doing a book of comedian pictures.
Okay.
I participated in this book. Mm-hmm. I played like a 40s era Louis B. Mayer type guy, you know.
That's perfect.
Which I think is perfect for me.
Yeah.
I always fancy myself a
producer.
Yeah, big producer of motion pictures.
Yeah, so the idea is to do a gallery opening that's going to be a charity event. We still have this whole year to shoot. Uh-huh. The event will be at the end of the year. That's the plan right now.
Okay.
But recently I just shot Tracy Morgan and Jim Gaffigan.
How did you get access to these people, Limore? What kind of feminine wiles did you unfurl?
Well, you know what? I started out with the nicest guys here. Well, first of all, it started out with you saying it's okay to approach the comedians. So I approached.
That doesn't sound like the Noam Dorman
permission.
I know.
Well, you said you're not going
to. You don't know the Noam that answers to pretty girls.
No, that was not the
way. I would say that 90% of comedians would be thrilled to have a beautiful woman approach them.
Everybody were just super nice because I'm doing this for charity, so they were so nice to give their time. And then when,
charity is a racket. Do you know that? But go ahead.
Okay. But
across the board, that's a sweeping narrative. No,
every day, we want to do this. It's for charity.
Lamore, I believe you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Noam, you should know better. You know me for many years.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is a picture of Tracy Morgan in front of, I guess, at a Lamborghini.
Ooh.
Yeah, we went to the street where he grew up in the Bronx, and I shot him. But, you know, after all these years, he comes back and he's, you know, and then we did another shot of him. This is Jim Gaffigan, but I will go back to that. We did another shot of Tracy at the playground where he grew up playing.
Here's Tracy in a swing.
On a swing. Just having the best
time ever. What I propose...
He's a very kid at heart.
Can I just say something? I know this is crazy, but just for Janine, what I mean is that a lot of what is... The charitable giving is a fortunate byproduct of a lot of what is done for reasons which are not charitable. It's to advancement, whatever it is, but they'll do it for charity, and the charity does benefit from it, and that's great. But I get approached all the time by people who want to rope me into doing something, and they tell me it's for charity, and it make me feel stupid for not wanting to do it, as if I'm some Ebenezer Scrooge.
So my charity, is for...
But that's why I say it's a racket.
Thanks,
Noam. Not because
my
I'm against charity
is for children who suffer from anxiety and mental illness. And I think that's a really...
That sounds right up our alley.
Well, I'm not...
Yeah, that's comedian involvement.
Thank you, Noam. That's why I approach comedians. You guys, yeah. I mean, comedians know what it's like to be anxious. Right. You know what it's like to have, you know,
depression.
I think
most humans know what it's like to be anxious and depressed.
Exactly. And it's kind of close to my heart because I suffer from anxiety. I mean, everything that I do, I analyze 100,000 times. And I know what it's like to be anxious. So I want to give to kids. That's why it's close to my heart. It's not, you know... I could have done this.
Lamore, you don't have to sell me on it. Noam is just an awful,
terrible Scrooge.
I'm sorry you had to sit across from her.
I mean, seriously, you know, like you behave like you don't even know me.
What I propose, Lamore, is
his father. Okay, like.
And boy, are you in trouble now.
We go way back.
Lamore, what I propose is you give Janine a card and. And if she's interested, she calls you. I don't want to put her in a position where
Absolutely.
She feels obligated.
I think you already
Here's
did.
My number, Murray Hill 7.
And Jim Gaffigan's, that Jim Gaffigan's shot.
But we just have to say, aside from the project and the charity and all that, these photos are really amazing
I know
photos.
You did. Nice,
like, they're
nice
really
job.
Amazing yeah,
she's
photos.
She's quite a good photographer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Noah.
That I have to admit.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
Thank you. Here.
And a hot chick.
You can pass
oh,
it
no, no,
around.
No, like I said, you don't have to sell me on it.
No,
I,
just say
you had me at
We went to McSorley's.
We,
you know, with Jim Gaffigan, we went to McSorley's, which is a 160-year-old pub. And mm-hmm. with him, we did him both as the bartender and as the coal miner.
Right.
He's one of the world's nicest guys.
He is very nice.
Jim doesn't work here either, no, and I think that is a personal thing, because I think you used to not use him back in the day.
He's done the underground a few times.
Oh, yeah. Wait, but can you answer?
Sets here. Jim Captain's done sets.
Can
not
you
a
answer
long time.
Not a just long time. Noam's question? You started to answer about how you got access to these.
How I got access to
yeah,
the
to the,
well, first
the
of all,
more celebrity.
I've been friends with a lot of these guys for many, many years. I mean, you know, I've been friends with, you know, back in. Well, it all started really with Artie. Artie Fuqua, who's
what, everything
a very
starts with Artie
old,
Fuqua.
He's a very old friend of mine. And after he woke up from his coma, I called him and I said, I want to do your portrait. That's how the idea really started, just me wanting to shoot Artie. Mm-hmm. And then when I shot him, I realized, you know what? I can do something with this. I can do something good. And that's how it all started. So he was really the first guy, just because he woke up from a coma, that was the idea. And then it evolved.
And then as more people did it, then other people became interested.
You should do a series of people who've just woken from comas.
Well,
that now there's a book.
But then,
a
you know, because I've been friends, with Marina and Greer Barnes. And
we have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Is there a website or start GoFundMe?
No
something. What can you? How can people follow up on this?
Not yet. Nobody's following anything yet. The reason I'm here is because I want more comedians to know about this, because I want, when I approach, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do it. I
what
know
will
about
the
it.
Website be called?
I don't know yet. We're not at that stage.
.com.
Yes.
I don't know. .com.
I don't know. I just.
But you mentioned there's going to be an event, and you're going to kind of release the book and
stuff. Yes,
there will be. At the Comedy Cellar, presumably.
If it's for charity, I'm there.
But he's going to be chagrined on the inside.
There's an organization that I'm in talks with right now, and we're probably going to do a pretty big event. So, but.
Limor, we have to wrap
Thank
it up.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
These are beautiful photographs.
Yeah,
and she is a talented photographer and a beautiful woman and a wonderful mother.
Thank you. Thank you, Noam.
Janine, I hope this is the beginning of a relationship.
A fruitful association.
I live right near here.
I know that.
I'm just right across the park.
Okay. Well, anyway,
does Janine qualify for 100% off on food?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, I don't like to eat in front of people.
All right. Well,
Janine, Hollywood told Janine she wasn't pretty for years, and she bought it. She always played the friend that wasn't quite the beautiful one,
yeah,
you know,
but,
like with Uma Thurman in The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it's lots of people feel that way.
In any case.
About themselves.
In any case, Janine was and is a beautiful woman.
It isn't
It wasn't true. It is now,
it
but it wasn't.
No, it isn't true.
I always thought you were hot. Anyway.
Thanks, Noam.
I did. I really did. I never thought she was cast as being the not beautiful
one. Well,
like
with hit or miss on stand-up for me, it's case by case. It's an acquired taste.
I saw you once in the Gary Shandling show. When there was something with you and Colin Quinn was your boyfriend or something.
Yeah.
And you were playing an attractive...
I was playing the person who was dating Colin Quinn, who was playing Rip Torn's son.
Yeah. All right.
Beryl Natterman says hi.
Oh, hello.
That's
Beryl.
Is
There's
that
so
the
few
name,
Beryls.
Does that name ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Do you like the name Josie?
From camp.
From camp, yeah.
She was the first Beryl I met, and then I read a book about a famous Beryl. Beryl, somebody who, like, I think flew, like, with Amelia Earhart or something.
Oh, Beryl Markham, I think it is.
It might be, yeah.
I think Beryl
But she
Markham.
Was the first
was a
Beryl.
Black woman pilot or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I believe so. And but your sister was the first Beryl.
Yes.
And I remember her with short brown hair. And was she in my cabin?
I don't know, because I didn't come up to visit.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Janine Garofalo.
Thank
Good night,
you.
Everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.